Hi everyone, and welcome to Frasers Capital Partners Strategy Update. There's been a big sell-off in growth, so today I'm basically just going to go through a few of the names we've been adding to in the last couple of weeks and give some thoughts on both the market and actually these individual stocks, because we're also in the middle of reporting season. So this is one of those moments we get a nice little snapshot into the actual performance of companies, and you know, you're really kind of most informed at these kind of moments. If you had to pick like a perfect scenario for us, it'd probably be a big sell-off that indiscriminately hits everything. And combine that with companies that are performing exceptionally well. You know, we've made all our best investments in those kinds of situations where stocks are selling off, but companies themselves are doing exceptionally well. So this is us. We invest in technology and the life sciences, and the average organic growth rate of our portfolio is now comfortably over 100%. And these, of course, are precisely the sort of companies that sold off the most over the last few weeks. Since inception, we've generated pretty good returns by focusing on companies with true customer love and explosive growth. So starting our investment process with the customer rather than with financials. And the reason for that is obviously that it's customer love, it's that customer devotion that actually drives the future fundamental performance of companies and, of course, the resulting performance of their share prices. Now, we test that true customer love consistently and regularly by assessing the explosive growth of our portfolio companies. We really expect our portfolio companies to be improving on all their KPIs, including revenue, gross profits, things like spend per user, and similar metrics. This is actually how we decide both to buy a new position and also how we decide to sell positions that aren't performing the way we expected. Multiples have now contracted, you know, across our portfolio, but about 50%, you know, and there's a weighted unweighted average of these kind of 15 odd companies, multiples have contracted about 48% from end of 2020 to end of 2021 using relatively conservative forecasts. The feature of this table is it shows that despite a kind of 50% contraction in multiple, despite the fact the multiples have halved, most of these companies are only down, you know, low single digits since the start of that year. And that really shows the power of this kind of growth strategy and really insisting on the highest standards of fundamental performance, particularly growth. The sell-off also continued and hit some of the highest quality companies in the world, which is US software. Now, we don't own many companies in this out of this list. You know, this was one of our major positions, but we sold out as multiples reached, you know, that 40, 50 or even 100 times in some cases. But this is a sector that we've been very slowly and tentatively adding to, as well as increasing our investments across the portfolio over the last week or so. We've been able to do this because, you know, about 50-odd companies, a very small number, didn't perform so well, didn't meet those very high expectations we had. So we're very quick to exit companies like that and reallocate to companies that were performing exceptionally well. And in fact, again, this was one of those quarters where some of our companies actually accelerated. So you've got a steep sell-off combined in an acceleration of fundamentals. That is the perfect buying situation in our mind. It's really what you want to use public markets for. You know, public markets offer you an opportunity to buy amazing companies that are growing exceptionally fast at discounts. No private investor would mark down the value of an amazing asset, you know, day by day or week by week, but it happens all the time in listed markets. So we really want to take advantage of those opportunities that sell-offs like this, you know, generate, because this is what sets us up for kind of the next leg up and the next set of performance numbers. The sell-off also hit kind of the bellwether for growth and innovation investing, Cathie Wood's ARK. There's many people that are kind of seem to be almost happy to see this happen, but of course, you know, Cathie Wood's performance has been exceptional over many years. This is not her first sell-off, it's not our first sell-off. You know, we've been through these kinds of things many times before. We've invested carefully and consistently throughout them, and we've used those moments to generate exceptional returns. The sell-off also hit life sciences. And you know, Cathie Wood's ARK, she really invests in mostly in device companies and enabling technologies. But these are small companies, and having that much money chasing relatively small market cap companies led to some pretty serious price appreciations. In many cases, multiples in this part of the market reached 50, 70, 100 times, kind of like the most richly valued software companies. These are phenomenal companies. We have owned some of these. We have been beneficiaries of that multiple appreciation. We own very little of them now, though we are looking
closely to see if we get a further opportunity over the coming weeks. I think kind of like software, multiples haven't really come down enough to make those exceptional buying opportunities. You're better finding new opportunities in other parts of the market. But I'll refer to some of those companies that we are buying shortly.
The sell was actually most pronounced in some of these biotech names. So these are the ones that I think ARK probably had the most influence on. So these were companies, you know, $500 million, $1 billion companies. ARK has over $50 billion under management and maybe 30, 40% of that in these kind of biotech names. So huge amount of buying power that pushed things up to 100 times sales or more. And we think it'll be a while before those companies could trade sideways for years, you know, as they kind of grow into their valuations. So we don't think that's kind of the perfect place to be. These are three companies. So Twist we owned from about $20 and have largely sold out of it over the rally. It's now gone, rallied all the way up to $200, which was surprising to us, and has come back down to 88. You can see at the bottom left of that how significant that multiple move was. So it kind of went up to 70 times sales from, you know, five, I think it was around 5-6 times sales at the low, around where we were buying as well. Plug Power was one of the poster childs. So there, we bought them at $4. It went up to 60, I think 68, 70 at the peak. We were sellers. We got some pretty good selling done by Plug. For better or worse, as we sold Plug, we bought other companies in the growth space, which also went down, nowhere near as much. But it did mean that with the benefit of hindsight, it would be nice to have sold and hold cash. But you can see these companies have potentially a long way to go down. Like, this is an industrial company. It's not a kind of software business. I would also point out, if you look at these charts, if you go on the bottom, the light blue line is the revenue. So you can see why these companies, everyone got so excited by these companies. They just performed exceptionally well. You know, companies going from 75 million to 175. They were going to double or triple. It was just those kind of tenfold moves that were too excessive. It also kind of shows how helpful it is when you identify these things early. Because all these companies, after huge falls, are way ahead of where we were actually buying. We know that's called comfort if you invest in the fund in the last couple of months. But it's important to know that that's actually what we're doing now. You know, we're finding the next set of these companies. We're working pretty hard to do so. Snowflake I've just put there because it's interesting that it went to 100 times sales. It's very rare you see that. And, you know, I guess it shouldn't be too surprising that it peaked at nearly 400 and is now under 200. I think that was likely to happen irrespective of what happened in the broader, you know, growth space. Mercado Libre is one we've been buying recently. So they're growing at 159%, they just reported. This is one of those ones we bought basically at the lows, around $400, you know, last year. And we are adding it again. And one of the reasons for that is, you know, we don't look at price charts, we look at EV sales charts. The reason for that is these companies themselves are changing. So price charts don't really take into account that. You know, the company is different now than what it was last year. Share is different. You know, the company, the underlying thing is just a different beast. And EV sales is just one way of kind of, you know, accounting for that. It's probably the easiest way as well because it's very difficult to gain revenue. You can gain earnings, but sales are dollars that customers have had to spend with you. So you can see that Mercado Libre is actually cheaper than it's been in 12 months. And is down at levels that, you know, provided exceptional returns. I wonder if you've got a price chart, or just a short-term price chart, you know, exceptional returns if you're buying kind of at the lows. And it's actually cheaper than it was this time last year before that enormous rally. And that's really what, this is really what we're trying to do now. We're trying to find these situations and add to them and build to all these positions and obviously sell anything that's not working out as well. This chart shows analyst expectations. So the yellow line is 2022, what the average of analysts are expecting for revenue at that time. As you can see, it's going bottom left to top right. You know, I guess it was flat a couple of years ago, but all of the companies that we invest in that have done well have had this profile where analyst estimates have just every quarter they've been upgraded, and effectively it's because analysts fade growth levels down. So companies that maintain that growth level constantly need to be upgraded to keep the price in line with forecasts. Square is another one we're adding the last couple of days. It's been a pretty big run. It's been a strong performer for us. But it's obviously down, you know, I think 30% from the actual high. You can see in this chart on the right, you can see, it doesn't actually label it, but you can see they've built their cash app from, I guess, no users 5 years ago to 36 million users. The reason that's exciting is because they basically have two businesses. They have these terminals, started with terminals, now increasingly digital terminals, that they sell to merchants. They market to merchants, so the people that own the shops. And now they have a cash app where people can put cash in and transact. And they've used things like cryptocurrency to kind of attract interest for that. Now, the idea there is there's so many different layers of payments. If you tap a credit card or an iPhone on a terminal, if it's a Square terminal and it's a Square cash app, Square will be able to cut out all those people. And there's very few people that have both the terminal and the kind of cash app. Actually, next time we speak to Afterpay, we might ask them if they're intending on doing that, because they're kind of building in that direction as well. You know, it's most companies are either very good for merchants or very good for customers. Square is one of the very few that is succeeding on both sides. It could really create that closed payment loop. This is an example of kind of the payback. So they spent, and Square kind of shares these charts. A lot of companies are quite secretive about these. But you have to assume that Square is somewhat selective. So they spent $1.4 million in June 2017. And you know, a couple of years later, got a $7.7 million return on that. And so that's a gross profit. So they're getting very high returns on the money they're spending, and of course they're spending. Another way of looking at it is the actual gross profit for each cohort. You can see that every year they get a new set of customers, then create a new set of gross profit, and that then grows with time as well. And so this is kind of how these companies get so big so quickly. You know, every customer that joins in a particular year grows, spends more and more with them, and every year they get a new set of customers as well. I thought I'd talk a bit about Moderna. Moderna is obviously something that we bought very early. It's a company that they've sold about a billion doses. Expect to sell a billion doses in 2021, and at a rough average price around $17-$18. In the US gets it for $15, probably a special deal because they help fund them. The rest of the world's averaging, you know, $20-$25, and they're also giving some away at a cost, I believe. That's interesting because the company itself is worth $60 billion, and they're likely to deliver 3 billion doses over the next couple of years. If you think about $15, $20 a dose, you can see that this company is likely to generate tens and tens of billions of dollars of free cash flow, and they've got platform technology, which means they can invest all that cash flow into pushing forward their drug development programs. We think it's one of the most exciting companies we own, both on a value perspective and also from a scientific perspective. There's some pretty interesting advantages of their approach. So this diagram shows the spike protein, and the red dots are all the little variants. So you can see the variant, what's called, you know, I mean, no offense to anybody from these countries, you know, the UK variant, the South African variant, Brazilian variant. You can see the actual spots where there's a change in base pair and a change in the amino acid. And Moderna can immediately just adapt their booster vaccines to any variant that comes up, and they can do that extremely fast. This diagram kind of shows the protein and where it sits in that spike protein. So the ACE2 is the receptor on a human cell, and you can see exactly where it kind of connects with the spike protein. Another interesting thing about Moderna is this should be very good for other respiratory infections. Their treatment should work. So this chart shows that effectively, you know, the leading causes of death globally are heart disease, but lower respiratory infections come up pretty high, you know, extremely high, ahead of Alzheimer's and ahead of all cancers, actually. So it's a major issue. And there's examples of, you know, coronaviruses that came from cows in 1857, I think it was, created an epidemic, and then became, became endemic in the population and springs up. So there's all these kind of coronaviruses that we get every year, rhinoviruses, other kind of influenzas that have often been around a very long time and become much less dangerous. So dangerous that most people don't even worry about them. It's just a pain in the neck. But they're really bad for infants and old people. And they're leading cause of death in effective, especially old people and people, you know, with immune issues. So it's very important to do this stuff. And what Moderna's trying to do is Moderna wants to create a universal vaccine that will simultaneously vaccinate you against influenza, a number of these other coronaviruses, and whatever the leading modern coronavirus variants are as well. So you can get that all in one shot. And their vaccine allows you to actually target multiple different proteins in one shot as well, because it can just code for different mRNAs. It's a huge step forward for the way that, like, most influenzas vaccines are done. They're basically, you know, effectively cultivated in eggs. So the influenza evolves for its egg environment, but obviously that's different to people. And also there's a huge lag time. It's about 9 to 10 months. So people need to predict which influenza strains are going to be prevalent in 9 to 10 months, and often they get that wrong. They'll always get that somewhat wrong because, you know, forecasting is imperfect science. Influenza is one of those viruses that's extremely good at changing its surface coating. So the only thing a vaccine can see is the surface. And it's just the way it works is it's just rapidly evolving those surface proteins. This is an example of some of their other pipelines. So they're in phase one for things like Zika, phase two for CMV, which is really bad for infants and again old people. And they're also working on, you know, HIV vaccine, which would be interesting. So this chart kind of shows the estimated cost of all these human respiratory diseases, from influenza to modern coronavirus. Actually, this excludes modern coronavirus, but includes rhinovirus, existing coronaviruses that are traveling throughout kind of the world. 2.6 people in every out of every 1,000 get hit with one of them each year. It's very common that you actually catch one of these diseases, especially if you think about it, you get 2 or 3 colds or several colds a year. Interestingly, with coronavirus, obviously, people not traveling and being much more conscious of hygiene, rates of all these diseases have collapsed. There's still something that caused a lot of mortality and a lot of, I guess in this case, 15 billion a year in the US. I wonder what else is worth discussing. I think it's Moderna has got a platform and a huge amount of money. It's almost unimaginable amount of money. If it's 3 billion doses at $15 a dose, you know, that's $45 billion coming into the company. It's almost unheard of, that amount to be spent on research. And they've really got a chance of being one of the world's leading biotech companies, if not the leading biotech company. So we're invested long-term in that. You know, it's probably, even after the recent sell-off, up 7 or 8 times, we think they're just beginning, and it's something we're likely to add to over the next week, particularly if the sell-off continues. I'll check in with Carvana. So we added a little bit to this. Again, they reported recently. We bought, you know, at $36 initially, and it's now $250, but it's like everything else, is down 20 or 30% from its highs in February. They recently reported results, and the most interesting about that was that their gross profit got higher than it's ever been before. So over 3,600 per car, out of average selling price of 20,000. They're still a while away from, you know, free cash flow profitability, but all those gross profit metrics are very much going in the right direction. You know, bottom left, top right. When they started, they were losing $200, and then, you know, a few years ago they were making 1,500. Now they're making 3,600. So you can see that they're kind of massively improving their profitability as they grow. And, you know, the model has been extremely effective, and as you can see in this chart, has effectively grown every quarter. And the EBITDA margin, when we bought this, the EBITDA margin was probably -8 from recollection. It's now -1.3. So that's after taking into account a lot of all the different costs. And the net loss margin is -3.7. So on the cusp of profitability with, you know, 100% plus growth, which is obviously what we look for. Teladoc was another thing that's been absolutely slammed lately. So we're probably, I guess, I think we bought around $100 like early last year. It went all the way up to $300, including this enormous rip in from January to February, and then sold off to about $130. There's two ways, that's per share. There's two ways of looking at these things, right? If we do our trick before of bringing it back into an EV sales, you know, the last time it traded at these levels, the stock basically went up 3.5 times. It was a couple of years ago. So the EV sales multiples come right down to where it was, you know, I guess at the beginning of 2020. And there were effectively exceptional returns from that. Now, Teladoc's a bit difficult because they did a major acquisition, and that's actually how we got most of our shares. We own something called Livongo, which went up 4 times and was acquired. But this is really interesting. I mean, we think digital health is here to stay. The company is still growing exceptionally well, even as the US kind of recovers from coronavirus. I don't think there's going to be easy money in the same way it was last year. But I think from these levels, it's exceptional value. You know, back down to 10 times sales this year and 7 or 8 times next year. And the peak was 28 times. So you can see how far that's fallen and how fast and where the opportunity lies now. Like, you no longer need for any of these companies really to assume any kind of multiple appreciation to get exceptional returns. And in fact, what's likely to happen is multiples stabilize and perhaps even go up for some of these companies that were particularly smashed. And then you get, over the next 5 years, we'll get the fundamental performance. I'm trying to think what else we're going to discuss. So Twilio is interesting. I mean, it's interesting because it shows where software is. So software is nowhere near the lows in terms of an EV on an EV sales basis. So something like Twilio bottomed out at 6-7 times, went up all the time, all the way to 30 times, whilst rapidly growing. So exceptional performance in the stock. And now it's dropped from 30 times to 15 times. So it's the multiples effectively halved. Now their gross margin isn't as good as the top software companies. So 15 times EV sales is more expensive than it sounds if you're familiar with software multiples. But you know, you're getting there. You're getting to levels, if you bought it 15 times 2 years ago, you probably doubled, more than doubled your money. And we expect going forward that's likely to happen. I mean, who knows what happens with interest rates and inflation? Maybe we'll come back to that at the end. But if we had to guess, we'd guess that, you know, multiples continue to contract. Maybe it goes from 15 times to 10. But that is then an amazing buying opportunity. The problem is our philosophy is you have to buy these things on the way down. You can't wait for the perfect price because it might not get there. And if the price is right and the forward returns are excellent, you're probably better off just buying and holding because those moments are very fleeting and sometimes they just don't come. I'll briefly talk about Alnylam, and that's the last company we're going to cover. So Alnylam is very similar to Moderna. In fact, the chief scientific officers right at the beginning of both of their journeys was actually the same person. Instead of mRNA, they use RNAi, which is like an interference molecule that plays around with protein expression. And it's particularly effective with liver diseases because it just seems to aggregate there. But they've been able to roll out four treatments. They've got an extensive pipeline. You know, four candidates in phase two, phase three. They're actually targeting four drugs a year. They think they can get to a point where they're delivering four new treatments every single year for a single company. And that's exceptional. Like Moderna, it's very easy to change the manufacturing sequence. A facility that can make one RNAi can probably make all the RNAi treatments. It's completely different to kind of a drug company which requires significant retooling. And these are not as famous conditions, but pretty bad if you have them. Liver diseases are pretty nasty and a lot of people get them as they age. So Alnylam is likely to be one of the leaders there. And you can see that this was one of those companies that was trading at 60 to 80 times sales, like many of those other biotechs that effectively it looks like ARK was pushing up. And like kind of what happened if you bought a successful company at 80 times sales? You know, you're probably up 30-40% over 2 to 3 years. So not a great return. You did okay, but you didn't do particularly well. Now it's a different story, obviously. Now those multiples come all the way back down and you can actually value this company as though, you know, you don't even need to value the pipeline. The pipeline is just gravy. But that pipeline we have extremely high confidence that pipeline is real. And as they kind of develop the drugs in their pipeline, they'll be able to replenish their pipeline. And so this is the sort of company that could grow, you know, effectively indefinitely in the future on a human time frame anyway. That's probably it. I think there's a few takeaways. You know, maybe at the moment, you know, there was an inflation print that came out at 4%. The Fed was pretty blasé about that. The reason for that is it's a very unflattering year on year. So prices actually went down last year, consumer prices, and then they're higher this year. So from a very low base, effectively a negative base, to where we are now, that 4% is probably not steady state. But there's no doubt that prices are rising. I mean, you can feel it everywhere. You can see it everywhere. And interest rates at 1.7% seem low for inflation that's 2, 3, perhaps even 4%, likely less than 4% for that reason I just mentioned. So there's a good chance that multiples come under pressure, but we don't trade multiples. We don't need to rely on multiple expansion or contraction. And in fact, after big contractions like we've just had, that's when kind of forward returns are the best because you don't have that contraction ahead. You know, over the last kind of 6 months, the trade-off has been how fast is it growing and how much can we afford the multiple to contract? Well, now a lot of companies, for example, Teladoc, have their multiples contracted right back to the middle or bottom of their range. There's some companies like software that are kind of at the top of their long-term range still, But we're not really investing too much in those areas at the moment. But the most important thing to notice here is that the companies themselves are still performing exceptionally well. We don't own any pre-revenue SPACs or speculative enterprises. I think that part of the market is going to suffer for a very long time. I think if you think of charts like, you know, 2000, 2001, where tech just went down for 2 years, I feel like that's probably the future for a lot of those SPACs. I think it's a very dangerous part of the market. The companies without revenue in many cases, unproven technology in extremely competitive markets as well. So there's no guarantee that they'll, even if they succeed, that they'll be competitive in 3, 4, 5 years' time. That is probably the toughest part of the market. And then, of course, cryptocurrency has gone up a lot. So I think if that cracked, that would really be the nail in the coffin of the speculator and kind of cause a lot of panic. But that's obviously where the opportunity is. That's where you get your long-term entry points as well. We are starting to see, finally, rising short interest and increasingly universal bearish sentiment. It's also kind of what you need for these things to kind of bottom and to form the base of the reality of a rally. There's definitely been a capitulation amongst, you know, commentators. If you're on Twitter, you'll know that a lot of the people that were kind of posting their returns over the last year have gone very, very silent. You know, people like Chamath are no longer kind of prancing around. Everyone's been kind of humbled by the last couple of months, and that's probably a good thing. That's probably a very good thing. It's like what we're doing now, we're just going to continually review our portfolio, make sure each company is doing exceptionally well, and really set ourselves up for the next leg up. And again, we don't need a speculative boom to make money here. We just need the companies to perform. And that's kind of the definition of why they're in the portfolio. Now, process identifies these. We hold them for as long as they're performing. And we still have over 45, we've probably gone down from 50 to 45 stocks. But we still have 45 companies that are doing exceptionally well. And I think the true winners will, as always, be those that invest and hold long-term. Thanks for that. I think that's broadly it. So I'll stop there. And if you want more information about us, feel free to contact me directly or go to our website at www.frazerscapitalpartners.com. Thank you.